Welcome to Rooting For You, a seasonal gardening podcast for non-experts. I'm Tess, and I know nothing.
And I'm Elise, and I know some things.
Each week, we'll chat about one gardening topic, and then discuss the effort-reward payoff by asking, is the juice worth the squeeze? Just a heads up, there might be a bit of swearing in this episode. You've been warned. We keep a list of topics that we want to do for the podcast, and today's topic has been on that list for so long, I can't even remember when we first mentioned it. Today, we're talking about yakin. Now, Elise, I was going to ask for a sell on the yakins, what it is, how do you cook and eat it, your favourite yakin recipes, but instead, do you want to explain to everyone what's in front of us right now?
So this morning, I got up, totted out to the veggie patch and dug up some yakin that I have brought to serve to Tess today. So not only can I tell you guys about it, but we can see live on air how Tess feels about the yakin and is she sold.
Okay, I'm going to set the scene for you. So We're just sitting at the kitchen bench gas bagging away as we usually do pre-podcast. And you've pulled this thing that looks like a large elongated potato out, and you're giving it a bit of a wash and you're giving it a bit of a peel the same way you would do a potato. And I thought, oh, Lisa's getting her dinner ready. It's an odd call, but whatever. And then I'm looking at this potato and I'm like, this is the crustiest looking potato I've ever seen.
Yeah, because I hadn't explained myself at that point. But no. I'm glad I didn't, because it is interesting to see your expressions wondering what the hell I was doing. So we've peeled it. We've cut it up. It's sitting in front of us. Now, here's the question. Do I give a shot at explaining this and then you taste it?
No, I think I just taste it first. Taste it first.
Okay. She's going in for it. I've cut it up.
To set the scene, it started out looking like a potato. Now that it's sliced up in kind of
Battens,
or as you would fry up chips, I guess, It's starting to look more like a pear. Yeah. Like it's got a watery pear kind of look to it.
Without giving my description away, a lot of people do use the pear as a similar vibe.
Before we do, hang on, let me just take a photo just in case we want it.
I would like to say I cut this up about half an hour ago and it's starting to go a little bit brown, but you get the idea.
Oh, this photo's never seen the light of day. It's hideous.
Maybe in the stories.
Maybe in the stories. Okay, so this, is it just a, you haven't cooked it, you haven't steamed it, you haven't done anything. I'm just going in raw.
Yep. It's raw. I've just peeled it. That's the only fun thing I've done. And like I said, it was dug up from the ground. It was underground this morning.
This is fresh farm to fork.
Literally. Or farm to finger as the case may be. Okay.
Ooh.
It's pretty nice, right?
It's so different to what I was expecting. Mm-hmm.
And like you would not think that was grown underground.
No. Mm. Okay. Do you think it's disgusting for people to hear us chewing?
Will this stay in the episode or we're going to mute our chewing noises?
Okay, I've got one more bite and then we'll be done with the chewing.
I got one too, so let's go. Maybe they can hear the crunchiness.
Yeah. It kind of tastes like a super mild pear.
Mm. Like nashi pear. Like a nashi pear. Yeah.
Like a slightly underripe or al dente nashi pear.
This is true. And actually, if I had harvested it and kind of aged it for a couple of weeks, it gets sweeter over time. So I wonder if I had done that, whether we'd be even in more pear territory.
Yeah. Okay. So I've tasted it now. It's definitely more fruit vibes than veggie vibes.
Agreed.
How do you eat, cook, not cook? How do you use it?
Well, I always call it my ground cucumber.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because I agree it actually does taste more like a pear, but that crunchy, like really watery flavor, watery
vibe.
Yeah, vibe. I use it like I would a fresh cucumber.
Yeah, okay.
So like chopping it up in salads or like grating it into things anytime I kind of want that freshness.
Yeah.
So that's how I use it. And because cucumbers obviously aren't in season in winter, but this is prime eating time in winter.
And you've told us how much you love a cucumber.
Love a cucumber. So this is my winter cucumber in my mind. That's okay. How I use it. But there are actually a lot of other applications. You can cook it the same way you would cook any kind of sweet potato or potato, any kind of root vegetable.
I just can't imagine it cooked now that I've had it raw.
But when you think about a parsnip, like a roasted parsnip is actually quite sweet.
Yeah. Yes. Good point. Good point.
So I feel like it's those vibes.
Yeah. Okay.
But here's when it goes totally off tangent is a lot of people, so it's a South American vegetable, a lot of people actually juice it.
Oh, okay. And you can see that.
Like
yeah.
A sweet, like a sugarcane juice almost.
Yes.
And what, again, in South America is often done is they cook it down and make a syrup, kind of like a maple syrup or a rice malt syrup out of it. That's how sweet it is.
Ah.
So there's like, I'm not suggesting we do that, but like, you know, you can.
There's so many options
so
there.
So many options.
Okay. Okay.
I would say like for me, I really am all about fresh salads even in winter, but I get that that's not everyone's jam. Some people are going to move more towards the cooked veggies. So I think you just roast it the way you'd roast everything else.
I like it. I like it a lot. I didn't think looking at it I was going to like it.
It goes down pretty easy.
Yeah.
I'll say that much.
And just do you know anything about like nutritional value?
Yeah. So it is actually very nutritious, as are all veggies. But one thing in particular, it has a huge amount of inulin, which is a prebiotic.
Inulin.
Okay. Yeah. It's actually, you can buy inulin as like a supplement. That's how people additionally add it to their diet. It's a really good prebiotic fiber.
Good for the gut.
Great for the gut. And it's interesting because it has actually a lot of similarities to Jerusalem artichokes. That's going to come up a lot in the growing, but there's also a lot of similarities in the nutritional profile. But what I will say is, you know how the Jerusalem artichokes are the fartichokes?
Yep.
I've never eaten enough yakin that I've got farty.
Okay.
Now, is that a reflection of I'm not eating as much yakin as I am on Jerusalem artichokes, or is it they don't have that same effect? I've never read or heard anyone be like, oh, watch the yakin, you're going to fart. So
it doesn't also have a fun name like fartichoke. So,
well, on this actually, there is – it doesn't roll off the tongue the same, no. Does it? It actually has a lot of different names that it's known as. So okay. I thought we could run through them simply because I think in Australia, definitely yakin is the most common name. So that's what we're going to go with.
Yeah.
But people might know it as sweet root. Quite literal.
Yep.
Peruvian ground apple.
Also kind of literal.
Quite literal. This one I am not going to say right, but here goes. Strawberry jacama.
Okay, that's not helpful.
I'm not getting strawberry vibes. Bolivian sunroot.
Yep.
Lacon. Or I might not be saying that right, but sure. This one also quite literal. Ground pear.
Ground pear. Just back to your lacon. Is that with one L or two?
Well, two L's.
So that's a yakon.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, well then, okay.
Like,
look, is it, languages
any
are not
Spanish
my forte.
Speakers out there, yeah. Particularly South Americans, please feel free to correct me on that.
Please
but
do,
I'm pretty
I'm
sure
butchering this.
A double L is like a y sound.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Maybe that's how it's spelt properly and like we like westernized it into like a Y.
That very well could be the case.
Interesting. Okay. Well, the double L acorn. the ground pear and then also pear of the earth. Also quite
pear
literal.
Pear of the earth. Isn't that a divine name?
It's quite divine. I tell you what, it's a lot easier to grow than pear. So if you like pears, I highly recommend this. Now,
and you could sub this in for a pear with like your juicing in your salads and eating it raw. So,
well, I love pear and apple in salads. Always. I'm obsessed with that. My dad cannot stand it. He's like, is this a fruit salad or a dinner?
So, such a dad joke.
Such a dad thing to say. So for me, this is like I've got my cucumber component, but and I've got my like little fruity thing. So it's the perfect salad addition. But what I was going to say is yakin in the Inca language that this originates actually translates to water root, which I think is also
That's also quite fishing.
Applicable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if that rings a bell for anyone, but yakin is what we're going to go with.
Someone told me one time that in Peru, they have X crazy number of different potato varieties.
Well, everything has a billion varieties. We
That's
just don't
point.
We just
don't
cultivate
like,
them.
Yeah, true, true.
And with the Yakon, actually, there are lots of different varieties and lots of different colours of Yakon. And if you were in South America, you could access those. Us in Australia, you're only going to get the white variety.
Okay.
Which is what we're eating. And we'll get onto that when we're looking at like where to buy it. But even something like this, it's so obscure. There are, I don't know, six commonly grown varieties of Yakon in South America.
There you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, you look at – it all comes down to the ability to like transport and disease resistance. Like,
yeah.
It all becomes commercial decisions, which is why when we grow it ourselves, we don't have to worry about those things.
Okay, let's get down to it. Ready to talk about how to grow it?
Well, I would just like to say for everyone that is playing along at home and never seen one of these before, they – I don't know how much that one weighed that I just prepared in front of you.
Maybe like 400 grams?
Yeah, I'd say. So – the Yakon, so it looks like a sweet potato or a potato.
It looks like potato coloured in this white variety that you've got with like the dirt because it's just come out of the ground.
Mm.
But it's more sweet potato in shape.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. They can range in size between 300 grams and 2 kilos.
Whoa.
That's a big one.
If you let it get too big, does it change like the flavor of it or is it still good?
I don't think so. I've never pulled out a 2 kilo one. I'll say that. But I have pulled out some whoppers and I've found them to be just the same.
Okay.
So that's kind of, the visual that people are getting. It's a perennial, stay in the ground all year round. So you know how much I love that from a selling perspective.
Yes, yes.
Am I still needing to sell you on why we're going to grow it?
Oh, I mean, the perennial stay in the ground all year round, that is obviously a highlight for me.
Such a selling point.
Yeah.
Winter harvesting, tick.
There's not much happening in the ground in winter that we're eating. So.
Exactly. Perennial, tick. I would say out of all the edible crops I grow, this gets probably the least attention. I mulch it once a year, that's it.
I mean, spoiler alert on the squeezy juice.
It's a low investment crop for a good yield.
Okay.
So, yeah, let's talk about growing it.
Let's talk about growing it. Is it now the time to start getting it in the ground?
No.
Oh, okay. Harvest time? This is why we – I mean, we normally
why
do the
episodes.
Why
are we doing this now? You wanna wait until I'm gonna start again. If you're in a really cold area where it's like frosty or close to frosty, I wouldn't plant it in winter. I would wait until spring, until it's warmed up a little bit. If you're in a warmer area, you actually can plant it year round.
Yeah.
But now is the time to harvest it.
So, okay.
And the time it needs attention.
Okay. So we'll remind everyone of this episode.
Yeah, and
in
I mean,
spring as well.
You know, we're coming to the end of winter now, so you're not that far off.
And everyone's probably starting to think about their spring gardens as well.
So. Get a garden bed ready for it.
So this is a perfectly timed episode.
Perfectly timed. I'm sure there was method to my madness. I just can't remember what it was. Now, when you're picking a spot to plant it, we have to be very, very conscious of this because it is a perennial stay in the ground all year round. So we're not putting this in a veggie bed that we're going to grow tomatoes in. We want to grow tomatoes in the future.
No, exactly.
Pick a bed, stick with it. Just like Jerusalem artichokes. If you've grown Jerusalem artichokes before, you're going to be very well placed to grow Yakons.
Okay. Similar.
It'd be really similar in lots of ways. If you haven't listened to that episode, I'd almost go back and recommend it because it really is going to throw a lot of the same stuff. We're going to have the same bed, the dedicated bed for this crop. And they're going to grow tall, stick-like plants that look vaguely like a sunflower, just like the Jerusalem artichokes, with little yellow flowers, quite fitting. And underneath at the roots, that's where these tubers form that we're going to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing where all spring, summer, and autumn, these tall plants shoot up. They look quite pretty, actually. And then come winter, they die down, and that's when we harvest the roots underneath. The only difference, not the only difference, but a key difference between this and artichokes is artichokes can be quite invasive, as we've talked about. Like once they're in a bed, they're never leaving. They'll even start coming out of the bed. Like they're a real pest. The Yakon isn't a pest like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have it in a spot that was next to something else and it's not going to take over.
Okay.
The flip side of that or the negative of that is it's not as productive as Jerusalem artichoke. So if you want to look at like food production per square meter or whatever, the Yacon's not as good. But nothing's as good as a Jerusalem artichoke. So if that's your standard.
So it's still good.
Yeah, it's still
good.
But
just not as good.
Just not as good, yeah.
So it's a permanent bed, so we've got to give a lot of thought into where it's going to be.
Yeah.
What kind of sunlight do we need? And obviously, what kind of sunlight do we need all year round?
We need good sun in the warm months, but in winter, nothing is happening.
Okay.
So you need good summer sun, but you don't need to worry about the winter situation. Again, dahlias are a really similar crop in a way. And the dahlia tubers, our little penguins, look quite similar to the Yacon tubers. So that's the same thing, that we want the sun to get the best crop of dahlias, but then in winter we cut them down, they stay under the earth, there's nothing going on. So anywhere you could grow a dahlia, you could grow a Yacon.
Mm-hmm.
Good summer sun, don't care about winter.
Okay, okay.
Now, being a root crop, loose soil is really important.
Yes.
So we want to make sure before we plant them the first time we have loosened up that soil. This is key with all root crops. They will actually grow quite well in shitty soil.
Oh.
They'll grow better in good soil. Yeah. But, you know, there's some crops that you just can't get away with that because you'll get nothing. You will still get a good harvest in shitty soil. But if you want to increase the amount you're going to get in the size bed that you get, increase the soil.
Okay.
Like increase the quality.
Yeah,
the
quality.
Soil.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this is one that can kind of, you can get away with treating it badly and it will still perform for you.
Wow.
I know. It just wins all around.
Okay. So is there any options here for a pot, a grow bag, anything like that? I mean, it sounds like we kind of want to contain it the same way that we wanted to contain the Jerusalem artichokes, because otherwise they'll just go everywhere.
Oh, you're right, actually. I didn't think about that before this episode of could you grow it in a pot or a container, but you absolutely could, or like a grow bag, definitely. Yep. You're just not going to get as much.
Yeah.
But totally you can.
Okay.
I wouldn't grow it in anything smaller than half a meter diameter, which actually isn't that big.
Like that big diameter. Yeah that's not huge.
No, it's not huge. I feel like in that you could get like kind of like one, you would plant one when we get to the what you're going to plant, but you'd plant one rhizome in a pot that size.
Okay.
I mean, look, and especially like, you know, you're not going to be eating this breakfast, lunch and dinner. So maybe that would be plenty.
Yeah.
I grow it in a 90 by 90 centimeter bed.
Okay.
And I get quite a lot out of that, which is big. Like, you know, in your garden bed, that would be quite big, but in a bigger context of food growing, it's actually not a big space and it does perform really well. I couldn't tell you like weight wise, but maybe I'd get 8 to 10 kilos. Maybe I'm being optimistic. Maybe 8 is better. So that's, I think that's quite a lot. But yes, you can grow it in something smaller. You can grow it in something bigger. You're just going to get more or less as long as it's really loose soil.
Yeah. Okay.
We're good.
So we've got where we're going to plant, what kind of bed we're going to plant it in. Are we ready to talk about what we're going to plant?
Yeah, because this is a bit of a discussion, and I think this is why the Yacon is not so readily grown, is it's actually kind of hard to get started with it.
Yeah.
So what you need to plant is a rhizome. We're not growing this from seed. So a rhizome, similar to how we grow potatoes or ginger or dahlias, we plant a root and then that multiplies. The difference here is the Yacon rhizome or tuber has two distinct parts to it. It has the brown sweet potato big ball thing that you just saw me peel up. And it also has this little red tuber that's the shooty uppy part, or will become the shooty uppy part.
Okay.
So you buy it as the rhizome that's the shooty uppy and you plant that. But then next year when you harvest, you dig it up, you take the edible big brown tubers out, but the little red tubers need to go back in the ground.
Okay. Are they connected to each other?
Loosely connected in the same way a potato is. It's like a root connection. It pretty much breaks straight away. Oh, actually, then that's not true. It is slightly attached at the top.
Okay.
In the same way.
Like a ginger knobby that you might have to snap off.
That you snap off. Yeah. Or like a dahlia, if you're splitting your dahlias. They're like kind of individual tubers, but they are attached at that head part. So we need to separate them. And the only reason I'm bringing this up I'm bringing up the harvesting discussion when we're talking about the what to plant discussion, is because if you've eaten a yakon or you've seen a yakon and then you order some online to plant, what you're going to receive is not what you will have eaten.
Right.
So it is a bit different in, you know, the potato sense. It is literally a potato we're planting.
Okay.
So the best way to get your hands on this, I think, is order it online. That's the only place I've ever seen
the rhizomes. And there's a bunch of online nurseries.
There's heaps. I think like they just often go out of stock and into stock or whatever. So just get yourself on a waiting list.
Yeah,
and
right.
Once you've bought it once, you never need to buy it again.
Yes.
So I bought one, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and then planted that. And then like all the other tubers we've discussed, it's multiplied. So now I've filled up that entire bed just from that one plant.
Mm.
So it's worth it at the start to find the thing and then you'll be home and hosed. It's not like potatoes where every year you're buying another set of seed potatoes or whatever it is. You're not. So get you one. Like I said earlier, there are different varieties, but don't worry about it. You're only going to be looking for one. It's a yakon or it's not a yakon.
Okay.
Simple as that. And like I said, in winter, in a colder area, I'd wait a bit to plant it, but the rest of Australia, get it in at any time. But I think, look, naturally, I would say spring is the time for everyone to be planting.
Yeah, okay.
How are we going to plant it?
How are we going to plant it?
Well, we're going to plant it 3 centimetres deep. And
how big are the rhizomes that we're getting?
Like a thumb size.
Oh, okay. In my mind, they were bigger than that. But
Okay. I think this – I don't fully understand how this plant works, but it is slightly weird because I suppose all I can equate it to is when we talked about the dahlias and we were so fixated on making sure the eye
– was pointing up.
Was pointing up and then and that the rhizome or the tuber had the eye.
Yeah.
This is kind of the eye.
Yes.
It's just separate.
Okay.
And it looks quite different.
Okay.
But it's the same principle.
Gotcha.
There's penguins still involved. So we're going to take these little eyes, these little thumbs, plant them 3 centimetres deep, and we're going to make sure they're facing the right way up. Now, these are quite easy to see because the thumb has a point on it. Like I think when you see it.
Yeah. Are there any like roots or anything coming out the bottom end?
No.
Okay, so you just got to look for the point and that's it.
Do you know what it looks like to me? It looks like a ready white head of asparagus.
Oh, okay.
This is getting some crazy visuals. But like, you know how the head of the asparagus, you can kind of just tell what the point, the tip is.
Yeah.
That's how this kind of looks. Yeah. I should have bought one for a demo. Anyway, I'll be able to find a photo of that. So just make sure that's facing up.
Yeah.
And then, so you're going to plant them 3 centimetres down. You're going to plant them about 1/2 metre apart. Which is why I said if you're in the 1/2 metre pot.
Then you're only putting one in.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And again, I only started with one and then I've divided that up myself to fill this bed. So if you were buying them and you wanted to fill that 90 centimetre bed on first go, you might plant 3 or 4 in there and that's it.
Yeah.
And then it's going to go. So it's quite economical as well because, the you know, say they're, I don't know, $3 or $5 each or something and then you buy three of them.
Oh, gosh, that's cheap.
Yeah, and then you got it forever and ever. Then the key once you plant them is to mulch them really well.
Okay.
We see this with growing potatoes. We see this with growing garlic. A lot of these tuber type plants, we mulch well. They will sprout up through that mulch, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
You won't like suffocate them. So that's literally all you do.
That's it.
Literally. There's no pests currently. Like things could change, but so far so good.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. They're also quite drought tolerant.
Gosh.
Now, look, I don't think any food crop is truly, well, maybe not any, that's extreme, but like out of the food crops that we eat, there are not many that I would say are even remotely drought tolerant. Mm. Like I say, you don't water your cucumbers for a couple of days and you're screwed. This is very drought tolerant.
I'm so surprised by that because this thing that's in front of me is quite watery. Mm.
I thought the same, but I do wonder if almost that's the reason why it can be drought tolerant because it holds so much moisture in the actual tuber.
Yeah.
So I have it in a garden bed that has no watering system. And look, obviously if it's really hot, I do get out there with a hose, but it is relying on me manually watering it, which let's be honest, doesn't happen that often.
Mm.
And you can see like it's still – totally juicy, watery, good to go.
Yeah.
So I think that is a really big plus for the home gardener or for the newbie that you've got a bit of wiggle room with the watering.
And that's also great if you're using a fabric grow bag. You don't have to worry about like setting up a dripper system or anything that, and it will just do its thing.
Yeah. Like I assume it to a point, right? Like,
oh yeah.
But
yeah.
For the most part, as I said, I treat it very badly and it delivers. Probably if I treated it well, like I improved the soil and I watered it more, I think I would have got a better harvest. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think I don't want to talk about effort-reward ratios just yet, but I think it's there. The other good thing about it is, and this is similar to artichokes as well, because it shoots up these strong flowery heads, it actually shades the garden bed really well, which means that you don't get weeds coming up.
Okay.
So you don't really have to weed in between the yakin. I find that the edge of the garden bed that does get a little bit of sun, I get like a row of weeds along there. But in the thick of it, I really don't. And if I did get a little weed, when I go and harvest them and pull them up, I can just get any weeds out. So it's not onerous in that department either.
Yeah. Can we keep just going through the life cycle?
Oh, yes.
So plants will start to...
So we've planted them.
Yeah. And then the plants will start to like spike up through the mulch.
Yeah.
And then they just grow. How high do they get?
Well, people say they grow to 2 meters tall.
Oh, gosh, that's high.
Mine do not grow to 2 meters tall. I feel like mine grow to a meter if I'm lucky.
Okay.
So, again, maybe I've got potential for a bigger harvest still if they did get up to there. So I'm going to say between a meter and 2 meters.
Okay. And so then they will just sit all through summer. They'll start to die off.
You may get some nice yellow flowers.
That's nice.
That is nice. They'll just hang out there.
Okay.
They've got these big... like hairy leaves. Like it's a unique looking plant, but I think it actually is quite attractive. Like it could become part of a nice summer garden.
Sure.
I do nothing to them. I don't stake them. I don't tie them up. They get no attention.
Okay.
They're just there.
They're just there.
They stay there all summer or autumn. Towards the end of autumn, start of winter, they die back and then they go black and like look horrendous in the same way our dahlias will and our Jerusalem artichokes will. At that point, you then cut the tops off.
Like how far from the top of the soil?
Maybe like 10 centimetres.
Okay.
But it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So get rid of
it. But you're not just like chopping the top off at the very top.
No. We're chopping off most of the bulk.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you got your little, you're going to chop them 10 centimetres off. Basically what I want is just enough sticking out of the ground that you can grab onto it to pull it up.
Okay.
And that you can kind of see quite clearly where it's planted. So then I chop all the tops off and then I grab – now you can do this at any point in winter. Like I did this morning.
And otherwise they just stay in.
They just hang out.
Stay in until the day that you're ready to eat them.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Except for the fact that once we come to spring, they're going to start sprouting again. So, yes, at any point, but throughout winter. So then we grab the 10 centimetre shooty uppy.
Mm.
We pull it out. We try and do it carefully. And if we've got loose friable soil, this is going to be a lot better. And then attached to that will be our little red rhizome that's next year's yakin.
Mm.
And will be a couple of big tubers. So we carefully remove the tubers, either with a knife or like a twisting action. Set them aside to eat, and then the little red rhizome I put straight back in the earth where it came from.
How many rhizomes? So you put one rhizome in this winter. How many rhizomes will you get at the end of this year?
I think I probably got, well, when I first did it, I put one in and I reckon I got three for the following year. And
okay, then so you're putting all of them back in.
Yeah.
Do you go to the point where now you have too many rhizomes, you're not planting them all?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So now I gave some away
today,
but probably there aren't that many people I know that will be keen to grow. So like I probably now will get to the point that, I will be getting rid of them.
Yeah.
Or I'll start another bed, but probably I'll just get rid of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. But that's taken, I'd say this would be the first year that I would happily need to do that. So we're talking like 4 years before I got to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And now ongoingly. So I'll probably pull them out. I'll look at them, whichever ones look the best. I'll put those in and get rid of the rest of them.
Okay.
So some people take the approach of when you remove them, you take that little red rhizome and you store it over winter and then put it back in spring, the same way people do with the dahlias.
Yeah.
I take the approach of, that's too much effort. I've never had an issue. I've never lost a rhizome over winter. I will say this though, it's in a raised garden bed. So I think that may help because like with the dahlias, we've got really good drainage.
Yeah, okay.
So I've never had one rot in the soil.
If you were going to store it, if you're worried about your drainage, where would you store it? In a just a dark, like a garage or – okay.
And then like in cardboard or something so there's good airflow.
Okay.
To in my opinion, and I'm not an expert on this definitely, but in my opinion, you are playing with fire more trying to store something properly than you are by leaving it in the ground. Like if you're an expert, of course you can store it well. But like as the layperson, I find actually in storing things, we end up making more mistakes than what we do if we just left it in the garden.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can store it if you want or you can just put it straight back where it came from.
And maybe you try leaving it in and see what happens. And exactly. It turns out they all rot, then maybe you don't have a particularly good drainage and you just spend another $5 buying another one.
Yeah, exactly. Or you could leave some in and take some out and just as an insurance policy or whatever. Lots of options. If you want to store them, like read into it more because there are ways you can increase your chances, like, you know, putting it in like the peat moss and all that kind of stuff, which I never bother with, but it's there as an option. Yeah, so I just chuck them back in. I then do nothing. So here's the other thing though. This morning I probably harvested – a quarter of them, I left the rest in. I personally prefer to just harvest them as I want them throughout winter and I just leave them in the ground because I know they're going to be happy there.
Mm.
What you can do is harvest all of them and then dry them and store them that way.
Okay.
I've never done this. I probably won't bother. But if that sounds appealing to you, give that a Google as to how. And they do say, like I said earlier, the sweetness increases with storage.
Mm.
So perhaps I would be getting a better product if I stored it and then ate it in a couple of months. But like I said, I'd be scared I'm going to stuff it up and then they're going to go moldy or something and then I'm going to waste my beautiful yak on. Mm. So I will just keep it in the ground until I want to harvest it throughout winter. Come the end of winter, once things start to warm up, they will start to sprout. So you want to have eaten everything you want to eat before that point.
Gotcha. Okay. All you want at the beginning of the next spring cycle is your rhizomes.
In there.
No more yakins in there.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
At that point, I might put some mulch around it again, just top that up. Doesn't really matter at what point I do that, but probably every year I do add some mulch, any type of mulch. And then I do nothing again.
Mm-hmm.
That's the cycle.
Fabulous.
Isn't it just? I quite like it.
So the big question, is the juice worth the squeeze? This is where we look at the effort-reward ratio of today's topic. The categories are superstar, high effort, high reward. Completing this will make you feel like an absolute rock star. Best on ground, low effort, high reward. Quick wins and fill-ins, low effort, low reward. And finally, the wooden spoon, high effort, but not much reward.
I think I might have given some hints as to how I feel about the Yakon. How do you feel about the Yakon, Tess?
I'm really into it. Mm. I think so many benefits. Now that I've tasted it, I would have been quite unsure about dedicating space. It's perennial, stay in the ground all year round.
Yeah.
I would have been quite unsure about dedicating space to it if I hadn't tried it first. But, I mean, if you haven't tried it first, listening to this, take my word for it.
Well, it is funny. The first time I never considered growing it and then I went to a gardening workshop at just a lady's house in Melbourne somewhere and she pulled it out and I was just like, oh yeah, okay, potato, got it. And then she peeled it. And I'm like, I think I said it earlier, but like peel them before you eat them. The skin, you can eat the skin, but it's not very nice.
Yeah, okay.
She cut it up and served it to me and I was like, this is great. And then I spent like the next 6 months on every waiting list I could find. Like, I want to get my yakin in the ground.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I do think, as you say, like once you've tried it, you actually really can see the potential to include it in your diet.
Yeah.
Which is exciting.
I think, and I think that it doesn't need water, that you can put it in a big fabric grow bag and just set it somewhere new. I mean, I love that, creating new spaces in your garden. And that is such low effort to not have to go to the effort to add in a dripper system or to be out there watering every single day. Of course, like, you know, hot days you might still need to go out. I am not convinced that it is a pretty plant. You haven't done a particularly good job of selling me on that.
Okay, but, well, I better find some photos.
With substance over style.
Do you know what I would be interested if someone's ever tried this. Like, if you've got some kind of border garden going on, like, could you just add a yak onto that? Obviously, when you harvest it, you're going to pull it up and maybe disturb some of the other roots. But I could kind of see it, like, fitting in to an existing garden. Okay. That could work, potentially. Do you know what I think is one of the biggest pluses for me is the fact that it doesn't need maintenance through the warmer months, in the sense of, you know, we're growing a cucumber, we're growing a tomato, we're out there staking it or caging it or pruning it or, you know, all those kind of just things.
General watching over them.
Just general, yeah, like eyeballing it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't do that with this plant. And in fact, where I have it in the garden, you can tell because I actually do have very good watering systems in most areas. It's a really obscure part of the garden that I don't go to very often.
Yeah, right.
So it's just out of the way, no attention given.
So I'm thinking it's probably your best on ground. I don't think it's a quick win and fill in, because I actually think it's a really tasty.
Yeah, I think it's got more benefit than just a quick win and fill in. Yeah. So look, I'm sold.
Obviously.
Obviously. Yeah, look, I do think if you haven't tried it, you might be struggling to be sold, but I've convinced Tess with one bite, so hopefully you guys can get that feeling too.
Yep, yep. Fingers crossed that we've conveyed that.
Fingers crossed.
Rooting For You is hosted by Elise and Tess, artwork by Lauren Janine. You can find us on Instagram at rootingforyoupod or email rootingforyou@elisealexandra.com. And remember, we are rooting for you.